from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
It is Fresh Friday, so much so that I forgot to turn my microphone on. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Friday to everybody.
I am I'm in a Friday mood. The sun was out for a minute. It's right now playing peekaboo.
You're just having too good a time on this fantastic voyage.
Yes. Yeah, no doubt about it. Ursula, what's going on the rest of the show today? I know scenarios will happen at 10:47. You know, it's time to judge other people's lives.
Yes, which is always so fun. Coming up at 10:33, right after Heather's newscast, should you be either 16 or 18 years old at a minimum to use social media? Yeah, we'll tell you why we're asking that question. That'll be coming up.
All right, let's get to it. The top three things you need to know at 10.
Number one.
It's Friday. So, as we always do on Fridays, we have a very special guest, our friend and colleague, Michael Medved from 770 KTTH. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning and happy Friday to Ursula and G.
My man.
So we are going to go right into voting rights legislation. This has been a tough week for Joe Biden and the Democrats. And voting rights and voting reform is a big priority for the Democrats and this administration. But yesterday, the House passed the Freedom to Vote John Lewis Act, but without the votes of Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, it appears unlikely to pass the Senate. I want to just look at, for people who don't know what's in it, so if we were to look at a couple of things in here, I want to know how you stand on a couple of these ideas. For example, making Election Day a national holiday to make it easier for people to vote. Or also making sure that there are national standards for federal elections to make sure that voters have similar access to the ballot box across the country. Where do you stand on this?
I think that's a real problem constitutionally. We are supposed to have separate state rules concerning elections. In other words, making it a big national holiday, there are not, for instance, which elections are national holidays? Is that only presidential elections? That might be possible. You could do that. But if you're going to make, for instance, we had elections, just had them in Virginia and New Jersey. Would that have been a national holiday? Are they now prohibited from having that odd year election that they've had for so many years? I really don't understand what the deal is with trying to make every single election the same. Here, we in the state of Washington, I actually like our mail-in voting. I think it's good. I think it's efficient. I think it's reliable. I think it's honest. And we've had good secretaries of state, mostly Republicans, frankly, who've done a good job with it. But would you now want, as the Democrats appear to do, to make everything national so that we could no longer have all mail-in ballots? This should be up to the states to decide. And this big drive to make everything federal is not going to work.
Hey, Michael, I'm gonna tell you this first. This conversation of voting, this is a really sensitive topic for me.
Of course,
we can go all the way back to the very beginning of this, or we can just keep it current. But can we agree that there has never been a time in this country where we have not tried to stop folks from voting? Can we agree with that?
No.
We can't? Then we're going to have to go down memory lane then. Okay, so
no,
tell me why
memory
you don't agree
lane, memory lane, it's been there for sure. But if you look at the recent numbers, and it goes back actually to 2008 when Barack Obama ran for the first time. Right now, there has been no attempt to stop people of color from voting, which is why people of color, black people in particular, vote at a higher rate than white people in almost every state.
Yes, but when you start talking, I'll give you an example. Since you were talking about current day, this just happened yesterday. Absentee ballot drop boxes can't be used in Wisconsin any longer. A judge just announced that. The judge ruled out Thursday that absentee ballot drop boxes can't be used in Wisconsin, potentially upending aspects of the spring elections and the fall's high-profile contest for governor and U.S. Senate. So, what I'm saying is you could, well, real quick, we cannot talk about voting without not talking about the origins of voting and the attempts and what's happened. And you want to go back to just, I mean, you're talking about just 58 years ago. Now, we're not talking 500 years ago. In 1963, when those civil rights workers ended up missing because they were trying to register black people to vote. This is not long ago. And then, of course, 2 years later, you had the Voting Rights Act that happened. But the history of voting in this country and the trying to stop black people from voting, let's not be secret. It has always been there. And the only difference today is it is hidden a lot better. So every single year we try to do this. And one last thing, the fact that we still have an electoral college is a sham. We shouldn't have it, because the reason why we have it is because, let's be real, people know that the majority would vote one way and there's a minority in this country. And that's what's happened in this country for so many years. The minority of people in this country, let's just take the top 1% or the rich, have always had a way to control the majority. And so these voting rights and what's happening today, I'm sorry, Michael, this is something you and I will never be able to agree on. It has never been a time in this country where there have not been trying to stop, and particularly black people from voting, so much to where people would die in this country. And this is less than 60 years ago.
Look, there is no question America over the last 60 years, and if you want to use the Voting Rights Act of 1965 as a turning point, it was a turning point. And if you look at the a part of everything you're saying would absolutely apply to America before the Civil Rights Revolution. But the Civil Rights Revolution was arguably the most important change in our whole country since the Civil War. And it one of the things that's changed is the number of black office holders. In other words, the whole idea that we are living in America right now, and this is what was wrong to me about what Biden did with his speech down in Georgia, America is not the same as it was in 1965. It has changed profoundly. And
what year did for you, Michael, in your opinion, what year did you say, you know what, things are really great in this country
Things are never really great with everything
what year
perfect
did they get better?
And no room for them. It began to get better actually right after World War II. And then it took a while, but that March on Washington in August of 1963 was a real turning point. And then the passage of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and the passage of open housing legislation, and the passage of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and when all of a sudden you see things that used to be inconceivable, people like a black mayor of Montgomery, Alabama, and the disappearance. Nobody talks about segregation anymore. You don't have a governor of a state, George Wallace, who came to the University of Alabama and said, segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. And that's gone. We are no longer having those fights.
They're gone. But with the blatancies of that is gone. But the hidden part of it, the systemic part of it. You said World War II, things got better for whom?
I'm saying that's when it began to dramatically get better. And you know why? One of the reasons was because so many black people served in our armed forces. And there was also a beginning of a dawning of a new civil rights movement and black leadership, including the great leadership of Dr. King, which we're all going to be celebrating. See,
were they allowed to get housing? Were they allowed to get housing after they fought?
No. It's not a question of being allowed to get it. It's having equal access to federal loans. Absolutely not. Which is why, and this was something that I remember one of the things that I'm very happy about today is that Sirhan Sirhan, who murdered Robert Kennedy, is not getting released. This is a very big deal to me because I was there for that the assassination of. I wasn't involved in the assassination. I was there in the room where Kennedy delivered his last speech, and then it was moments later that he was shot by Sirhan, who will not be getting paroled, which was the most ridiculous thing imaginable. But one of the fights that was part of that campaign in 1968 was open housing legislation. That it is illegal in the United States right now to discriminate for people, for renters, or for people who are applying for mortgages based on race. Now, does it happen? It does. Does it happen commonly? Well, no, because it's illegal. You can get into a world of trouble, which is as it should be.
Well, and I would just say that I think it still happens. It's just not. It's more subtle is what we're dealing with.
And much less common. It used to be the norm. It is no longer the norm. And then no one would say when I talk about America being the greatest nation, it doesn't mean that it's the perfect nation, and we're
Understood.
Very far from it. But see, what troubles me a little bit, and this concerns the holiday that we have coming up, is that when people compare America today to what America was in, say, 1960, it in a sense trivializes the epical, remarkable progress we have made as a country to get rid of this legacy of racism. It never will be conquered entirely, but we have made such dramatic progress and it ought to be appreciated.
Michael, really quick, you're right in when you say about the progress, but the one thing that you have to add about the progress has not been given freely. The progress has had to be fought for. That's the difference.
As it always is. I agree with you.
No. It should not be a fight for equality. That's the problem. Every single thing being a fight. When you easily talk about and celebrate the progress of this country, I think about my people in my family who've had to fight for that progress. So there's some people can say, oh, look at America. And some people can say, oh, I was never able to. So that's the difference in the conversations that we're having right now. So I just want to point out that every single time there's progress, there's always a fight for that progress.
Yeah, and by the way, let me say, part of what we were talking about before, when I think I startled you and maybe some of the listeners as well, by saying that you really should date that epical progress to the end of World War II. There's a friend who taught at UCLA and then taught at Harvard, recently passed away, Stephen Thernstrom. And what they have done has been to make clear that what happened in America was not something that white people gave to black people. It was something that black people fought for consciously. And the real change and dramatic change has had a great deal to do with changes within the black community in terms of no longer accepting secondhand status. And yes, fighting for it. So I am not denying to you or claiming that somehow there are fairies up in the sky who come down and shower you with rights and privileges that you should have had all along. It's actually the claims and the demands and the organized pressure that has helped to change America enormously for the better, which is what this holiday is about.
You guys, that was a really awesome, passionate conversation, and I didn't even want to step in because you guys were really going at it, and I loved every single second of it. Okay. Well, this is actually breaking news, and you might not know about this, Michael, but New York Representative John Katko has just announced that he is not going to be seeking re-election this year, and that makes him the third of the 10 House Republicans who voted to impeach President Trump last January to say that they're going to leave Congress next January. And he was in line to become chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee if Republicans win control of the chamber in November's election. So there is an exodus of sorts when it comes to those who voted to impeach President Trump. What is this saying to you as a Republican looking at what is happening in Congress?
Boy, that's a tough question, because what it says to me, the truth right now is not going to be popular with people in the Republican Party, but that the truth is that this is the way, number one, that Republicans can still lose their bid to take over Congress. I think the whole idea of a Trump-controlled party, if people are anticipating that Trump is going to run again for office, it's deadly politically, it's deadly substantively. What has Trump done since he left office to actually reassure people that he is not this wildly irresponsible demagogue that many Americans, and I actually believe most Americans, believe him to be? A party that wraps itself in Trumpism is, for one thing, it's not a party I have any interest in at all. And number two, it's a party that has no chance of success except in isolated places where they may not have made all that progress we've made in the rest of the country.
There's three lies.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's three of the biggest lies that Trump has ever been a part of. There is the birth certificate. So real quick, the reason we are even talking about Donald Trump today, and the reason why he gained so much of a political awareness for people in this country, was he got on the thing about President Obama's birth certificate. That's number one. Number two was that COVID would just go away and that it was nothing but a Democratic hoax. And number three, the election. Three of the biggest lies that we will always remember for years to come. But I just want to be simple and clear. I can't blame Trump for so many people loving him when he came to power on a lie about Barack Obama.
How can you not? First of all, you may not remember this, but I follow this very closely. By the way, I want to say I was the first person on national radio to attack this birther crap, which actually started before Trump. You know who was one of the key people pushing the birther lie? It was Alan Keyes, who run for president three times, lost, run for U.S. Senate. And there are people making money on this. And birtherism was evil. It was poison for the Republican Party. And it was racist. And by the way, and I've said on the air many times, of course it's racist. You have the first really serious candidate of color about to be elected president of the United States, and you're going to claim that he was born in Kenya based on absolutely no evidence. I mean, the entire thing is nutty. And it's one of the reasons, by the way, I want to be very clear on this. It was because of the birther thing that I said, this is in 2012, when Trump was first talking about running for president, I could never vote for such a man. Because he's saying stuff that no rational, sane, responsible human being could say. That Obama was born in Kenya. Well, you're right to focus on that lie, and that, boy, do we agree on that one.
Michael,
appreciate you.
Yes. You are, again, just more proof. You are a very decent, honest man, and we love our conversations. That so many of our listeners are texting in saying that was great. It is just more proof that it is possible for people of different experience and opinions. You can still passionately talk to each other and come away friends.
Well, especially
thank
when G
that.
Is such a great guy, and he is.
Yes.
Appreciate you, Michael.
Thank
you too,
you.
Man.
Take care. Have a great weekend.
All right, Ursula, what are we doing next? That was spirited. Yes. That was fun. I love
we're
Michael.
I know. Me too. Okay, we're going to talk about the use of social media and teens. There is a reason why some are considering an age limit or an age minimum when it comes to using social media. What do you think? We'll talk about that next.
All right. Gina Ursula.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us on the G and Ursula Show. Happy Friday to all of you. Is 13 too young to be on social media? What do you think, G?
By the way, I just want you guys to know that after this, because sometimes when you guys introduce topics to me, like some things that I didn't get a chance to read. So when we were first talking about it, I was like kind of going back and forth on it. And so right now, I have a definitive answer on this and a definitive fix on this. So let me answer first. Yes, 13 is too young to be on social media.
And the reason we're asking this is because of Facebook and their plan to release Instagram for kids. That has been put on pause, but it is still in the workings. And at age 13, your kids are going to be free to sign up for accounts on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, or any social media platform that they like. And so this all comes down to a law that was passed in 1998, and children's safety experts say it is time for an update because of what happens when kids are too young and they're on social media. The Children's Online Privacy Protection Act was intended to prevent online platforms from collecting the personal data of kids under the age of 13 for ad targeting and tracking. And social media companies have been allowed to sign up 13-year-olds since then. But there is this article that Chef pointed out to us this morning that talks about experts who want that age raised to 16 years old or maybe even 18. And you say that, yeah, 13 is too young, and you would be in favor of either 16 or 18. Why?
I want to change it now. Not even 16. I want to go to 18. And I want to tell you one of the reasons why. You can hear the difference in my voice. And this has nothing related to do kind of with this topic, but it also has to do with how I feel. There was a fatal shooting in Renton the other night, a couple nights ago. And it just come to find out, it was reported by Cairo 7 News, that the boy there was a 14-year-old boy that has been arrested in that fatal shooting. In Renton. So what does that have to do with this conversation? Well, let me tell you, I think that our children are just all over the place. You guys know that the internet is a place where you can go all kinds of places. Social media is a place where you can meet. So you might be a parent and you might teach different philosophies in your home, have different morals and values in your home. And you might believe in all of these things in your home, but your young man or the young lady in your home, because they are on social media, they are now learning other things outside of your home. And all of a sudden, some of these kids and what they're doing, like, I mean, it's not normal for this happening. So and one last point I'll make, Ursula, and I'll kind of shut up here, is what these kids type on social media, and then come to find out years later, we hear about, like, this person wants to be the superintendent of a school district, or this person wants to run for office, or they want to be this person, and then, oh, comes to find out they said the N-word when they were 15 years old on social media.
Well, that can go for adults, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So I think this is unrealistic. I am not in agreement with Facebook now or Meta wanting to push Instagram for kids, because we shouldn't be pushing it. But I think the idea of trying to say you have to be at least 16 years old or even 18. How about us as parents? Maybe we don't buy our kids a phone at the age of 9. Maybe we put some more controls. Maybe we have that conversation about what you can do to completely ruin your future by what you put on social media, because it's not going away. Even though you think it's on Snapchat and it's just going to disappear, it can be found. What
can
was
I
that
ask you a simple question? What do 16-year-olds gain, and what does society gain from their presence on social media?
Well, that I can tell you right now, especially in the time of COVID, they're gaining community. They're gaining bragging rights. It's a way of connecting. I mean, in some cases, that's the only way they know how to connect.
It's a positive experience for some and extremely negative for others. I'd say 16, minimum.
But how do you do that? How do you enforce that?
I can't believe of the three of us that Ursula's more lax on this.
No,
than
because
we are.
You know what? I feel like it's my responsibility to know what my kid's doing, make sure that they are informed of what it is, and don't hand them all the things and then leave them and plop them in front of a computer and say, you know, have at it.
But it's tough, Ursula. It's tough.
I know.
It's so hard. And by the way,
and
check this out. One more thing, Ursula.
Uh-huh.
I think it's harder today than it was when your kids and my kids were younger. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's harder in 2022 than it was in 2014.
For sure.
Like, it is crazy.
It is, but we're also exposing our kids to so much more at such an early age.
Yeah.
You know, and there's good in that, but there's also a lot of bad and a lot of negative. So, again, I think it should fall on the parents. I'm not going to count on Facebook. I mean, the kids are going to figure it out a way anyway around it.
Got to teach the kids to drive someday, you know what I'm saying?
There you go.
Yeah. Hey, coming up next in scenarios, everything centered around, let's just call it the reimbursement. We do that next. It's G and Ursula. It is the G and Ursula Show. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it'll be time for Agree to Disagree. And it's time to have some fun. Judging other people's lives. Scenario.
Here we go, yo.
I met a guy on a dating app and chatted a few times. It seemed promising, so we decided to try a date. We met. It was weird. He paid for dinner, but I wasn't really feeling him at all. The date was short. He took me home and asked if he could see me again. I said I don't think that would be a good idea and think this was going to work out, so no thanks. He said, well, if that's how you feel, I should pay for half of the dinner. He asked me for $33.25. I told him, I don't think so, and went inside. Now he keeps texting me and bugging me, calling me names and demanding me Venmo him money. He actually accused me of doing this just to get free meals. So, two things. Do people really do this? And what should I do? 888-973-CHIRO is the State Roofing text line. Ursula, you're up the bat first.
I think most people do not do this. Unless you agreed before the date, hey, we're going to go Dutch, we're going to go split it in half. If he's offering to pay, but because she doesn't want to continue, he's now demanding payment. The only reason I would have maybe paid half is to get him out of my life. But now, I mean, he's in danger of being accused of harassment. And if that happens, he's going to have a much bigger problem than the $33 bill.
Before Chef answers, I'm just going to simplify it. I think the dude's a weirdo, right? But I would suggest go ahead and give the $33.25. I think that $33.25 will be the best $33.25 you'll ever pay for in your life. Sometimes it's like, wait, that's all? That's all it's going to cost? Okay, here you go. And imagine that person is like, oh, okay, and they just go away. I suggest pay them the money. Chef?
Yeah, pay the man. Pay the man and then just block. I mean, that's your friend. Blocking your phone calls, blocking anyone annoying on social media. Go ahead and do that. That being said, I kind of identify with the guy in a weird way. Because,
oh, boy.
Okay, I'm going to admit something. There's when I was back in my dating life, I would usually discuss with people ahead of time, hey, you know, we're going to go out for a meal or whatever. If we're actually having a meal, if it's coffee, no big deal. How are we paying for it? Do you want to do Dutch or happy to cover the bill? I went out for a date with a young lady and I took her to a rather expensive place and her eyes like popped when she saw the menu. The date did not go well at all. And the bill came and it was like $200 and we split it. And she just gave me this look like, I cannot believe this dirtbag dragged me to this fancy restaurant and I had to pay $100 to be miserable around this other human being. I should have paid for that whole bill.
Wait, hold on. Why did you pick such an expensive restaurant?
Because at the time I had a decent amount of money and I was into fine dining. I was, you know, just coming off being a chef de cuisine at a fine dining restaurant, and that was kind of the wow. places I would hang out.
Okay, yeah.
I told you. You guys remember. You guys remember the first date. You guys know where I took Lillian, right? You know where I met for her for
yeah,
the
said
first
coffee,
date.
Coffee, wasn't it? Like, then coffee, you guys went
baby.
Dutch?
Anthem Coffee down there in Puyallup. Shout out to Anthem Coffee. That's where we met at.
Can I be honest? If
yes.
I were Lillian and you did that on my first date, there would be no second date.
Wait a minute, though. I told you guys, I did not think that she looked like her pictures. So I was just like, whatever. So I was very casual. I had on like this soccer shirt. You know how I can dress if I want to.
Oh, yeah.
I was so dressed down. Soccer shirt. I think I had on shorts.
What about a chain?
No, I was just cool. And all then right. when she showed up, I was like, oh boy, I am out of my league. Help!
So you're telling me you're dressed like a
league.
Four.
Help!
Well, now you're out of your league, but you still said, let's go Dutch on the coffee?
Yes! Wait a minute. Are you ready for this, though? You guess where the second date was?
Ruth Chris Steakhouse.
No.
Okay, what?
David Buster's in Auburn.
They have good food
yes.
out here.
I was trying to be the fun side. But we didn't play no video games.
Wow, and now you're engaged. That is too much.
Oh, man.
Okay, and I realize before you guys get upset, I realize that I have very old-fashioned thinking, but it is the way my mom raised me. It was the idea that, you know, men have to be a gentleman. They should pay for the first day. I mean, and I still have that thinking, and I know it's very old-fashioned thinking. So I'm in full support, but you got to arrange that ahead of time. We're going to go Dutch. Make it clear in the beginning.
Catherine says, my cheapest date, we met at Porter Sub. Oh, got to get out of here. I can't tell it. Coming up next, agree to disagree. Gene Ursula.